Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about Bird. I was going to say Birdhouse. And I was like, that's
wrong. We can talk about birdhouses if you want.
Bird box.
If that's something you're into.
I've never had one.
Once, but no birds ever nested in it in any manner.
So we'll table that.
This got off the rails real quick.
Talk about Bird Box, released in
2018.
Okay. And it, of course, has... Big names. Sandra Bullock, John Malkovich.
The list goes on.
And I saw one of the guys is Machine Gun Kelly, and I was like, I don't know who that is. And then I read it, and I was like, that sounds familiar. Like, he's a guy who does, like, music or something?
Yeah, he was
For the kids.
With Jennifer, the hot Jennifer. No, not Jennifer's body.
Megan Fox,
yeah.
Ah, yeah.
They're actually married.
Oh, okay. Well, He's in it. But of course, before we get into any of that craziness, what's new with you, Katie?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm here at nighttime, which I haven't been, as Meredith reminded us earlier. We haven't recorded in the evening or at night for
Katie watched me eat Indian food. I was like, DoorDash hasn't gotten here yet.
Well, the reason we're recording at night is because Meredith texted me this morning going, are we on for 10 o'clock? And I was like, who is this?
Yeah.
How did you get this number? New phone? Who dis? I'd completely forgotten not only that we were recording today, but that I was on the hook for the recap, so it was not done. So she was very generous to push it back to this evening. And that's good, because even though when this episode comes out, unfortunately and sadly for Meredith, Halloween will be in the rearview mirror. Right now, it is still...
My face looks all sour and upset. I'm like,
But right now, it is still looming ahead of us in all its joy and glory. And this weekend, probably the reason that I forgot that I was supposed to come record this morning is because Tom and Tommy have been gone this weekend for like their first kind of big hockey trip of this year. They're in Minnesota, which means that I've been just nonstop watching scary crap. So that's
just
what's been
your
new
best
with
life.
Me. Yeah, yeah. I'd started rewatching. They put Yellow Jackets on Netflix.
Yes.
And so I was hoping when I saw it on there that it had more than just the first season, because I never saw it past the first season.
Oh, is it only season one?
Yeah, because it was like it was on Showtime, but when it came out, Hulu was carrying Showtime, so I had access through. But in the meantime, between season one and two, that access got changed, and so I wasn't able to watch season two. But so I rewatched season one on Netflix, and then, of course, season two was not there. And then on Amazon Prime, the first episode of season two was free, and I watched that. But then if I want to watch the rest of season two on Amazon, it's like $25 for the whole season. So I'm still debating if I'm going to do that.
So you don't want to do like I'll just do a trial and then cancel it right before they charge my card.
Well, no, because I mean, it's on Amazon. We have Amazon Prime. It's not a trial scenario.
Amazon Prime trial for Showtime.
But it's not on Showtime. It's just Amazon Prime.
Really?
Yeah.
Ew, yuck. I don't like that.
I think. I don't know.
Well, we have to investigate this further.
Yes.
And make sure you can watch season two.
But in addition to that, so I've watched a couple of really good ones and a couple of really bad ones. One was on Victor's recommendation, actually, because he messaged being like, I know you hate vampires, but have you seen Salem's Lot? And I was like scoffing. I was like, are you kidding?
You silly bitch.
I sneered all over because like it's a Stephen King story. So of course, not only have I seen it, like I have on DVD the original from the 70s and then the first television remake with Rob Lowe from the early 2000s. I think
I've seen that. I love Rob Lowe though.
Yeah, and Samantha Mathis is the female lead in the first TV miniseries. But then I realized that he was asking because they made another one, which of course they do. There's one on HBO Max right now that I did watch and I thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Alfre Woodard was in it, which was delightful.
Love her.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
I'm glad you liked it because it's... Do you know who the lead for that movie was?
The dude?
Yeah.
No. Who's that?
He looked so familiar.
He didn't look familiar to me in the least. Who is he?
I was like, Who are you? His father is Bill Pullman.
Oh, how weird.
And he looked, like, on the top of his face, so...
Bill Pullman-y?
So Bill Pullman-y. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, well, I'll be damned.
Well, and then, on a related note, one of the bad movies that I watched also featured a celebrity child was Night Swim.
Yuck.
Yeah, with the lead is Wyatt Russell, the child of Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
Oh, okay.
Who I've seen in a couple of other things. And he was a professional hockey player, briefly.
I love him in, he was in this one episode of Black Mirror, and he's so good. It's really fun.
Yeah, he's good. The movie was hot garbage.
I had a feeling it would be bad.
Yeah. And then, oh gosh, and now I'm blanking on some of the, I mean, I rewatched, and this is me, like, I'll watch a bad movie and be like, wow, that was garbage, and then I'll watch it again. So I rewatched a movie called Polaroid. That I had already seen.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I watched it again. And I mean, just not like close watching. Like I was playing games on my phone doing other bullshit. But I did that one. And I feel like in addition to the Salem's Lot, there was one other good one that I finally watched Pearl.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, because I had seen X. And I knew that Maxine was coming out soon, but I hadn't seen Pearl yet.
I'm excited to see Maxine.
Yeah, and I knew that I needed to see Pearl before Maxine came out. So I watched Pearl, and it was very entertaining. It's very cool to see that story like continue to evolve and develop. Yeah, no. And just, I imagine if you'd seen that in the theater, like her grinning underneath the closing credits and how uncomfortable that makes you as a viewer. And you just want it to end. You want her to stop. You want it to be over. And it just goes and goes and goes. And then tears and start running down her face. Yep, but I was like, I gotta see it through to the end. Because that's the whole point. That's why he did that. Because it makes you so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But can you imagine, like, I don't even know if it had a theatrical release.
I don't know.
If you were in the theaters seeing that, like, oh my God, I'd be clawing my skin off.
I love Ty West. He's done so many, like, House of the Devil, The Innkeepers, and then those movies. And he's like so eccentric and weird and slow burn movies. And I'm like, that's weird. I love watching weirdo movies.
It's kooky. It's downright kooky. So I've seen some really good ones. I've seen some really bad ones. And it's really put me in the vibe for spooky season.
Spooky season.
Yeah. And speaking of the best time of the year, what's new with you?
I've been watching a lot of like movie list stuff that I like to listen to or watch, on AMC. They are really delivering when it comes to like movies lists and favorite moments, and the people that they interview are like top people, really involved, like Stephen King, George Romero, not George Romero because he's passed, but Greg Nicotero, his protege, Mike Flanagan, like just all these big names and actors that are part of these films and the writing, and just like lists of, top movie, favorite movie moments, themes for different episodes of like, and they have like Rob Zombie and just like all these filmmakers and Quentin Tarantino, and which is really fun to watch their take on what is shocking to them and what they really enjoy as people who are so creative.
Yeah.
For that reason, anything Stephen King recommends, it's like the same where I'm like, oh, I want to hear what he has to say because they're so influential. He has
so much credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been really fun. And so I've been watching Eli Roth. He has a series on AMC. And I think this is season 3 that I watched. Mm-hmm. And it has a bunch of great stuff on it. And one episode was all dedicated to Stephen King. So you might like that. And it had his son, who's also an author. He wrote Nosferatu and another book. And he talks a lot about his dad.
Joe King?
Yeah. Well, no, his name is...
Owen? His two sons are named Joe and Owen.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Joe is the one that co-wrote Into the Tall Grass with Stephen King.
Okay. I don't know. He just talks about his dad. And I'm like, oh, that's like Stephen King's son. So, yeah. But it's really fun, and they talk about all of his different movies that were made into, or excuse me, books that were made into movies, and which ones Stephen King really appreciated and felt like were good adaptations. They still talk about The Shining, and they're like, that's a totally different animal.
I'd like to think in his old age at this point, though, he's gotten over it a little bit. Yeah. Is Stanley Kubrick even still alive?
No, he's died, I want to say in the early... Yeah.
So we're not going to see a cage match between those two elderly gentlemen.
I want to say he died maybe in the late 90s because he did Eyes Wide Shut with Nicole Kidman and
I thought
Tom
that was
Cruise.
Like 99 or 98.
Yes. Yeah. And then he passed shortly after that.
Oh, okay.
And that was when those two were still together and making movies. And so I know it's really, I feel stupid even knowing that, but I like Stanley Kubrick. So even though he was an awful person. Yeah. Anyway, I digress. So I've been watching all that stuff, and it's been really fun. So, I think it's great because it exposes me to other stuff I maybe haven't heard about or, when I'm like, oh, I'll give that a chance if they say it has, like, a lot of good, moments or the cinematography is good, I'll watch it. So, and then we watched that Salem's Lot on HBO, the new one. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really good, too. I liked it and thought it was just really fun and very well done. So I like it when I see source material honored and doesn't deviate too much. And it's done very well. And the actors are, top notch. So that's always fun.
It kind of made me actually want to go because I haven't, I started in on Stephen King based on the novels that my mom had in her collection when I was in middle school. It's the case of a lot of people our age. And so there are a lot of his novels that, I still have those copies that were my mom's copies, but I may not have read them since I was in junior high or high school. And so there's a handful that I've gone back and reread over the years, whether it was for book club or for this podcast. Mm-hmm. But Salem's Lot's one that I have not gone back and reread. And seeing this newest iteration, it kind of made me want to because one of the things I've observed is that as Stephen King's work has gotten remade in more recent years, typically the newer versions are closer to his source material. And I think we've kind of talked about that before, that when they were first taking his stories and making them into films, he wasn't the behemoth that he is now, this like icon of horror. He was just a writer, right? And sure, so they didn't necessarily feel any like obligation or like maybe beholden to follow the details and all of the individual elements of his stories when they were just like took the idea and then made whatever movie they wanted to make.
Right.
Then when you see them remaking it years and years later under the umbrella of this Stephen King, like God that he is in the genre, I find that you see more, it is a perfect example. There's all kinds of elements and details included in the remakes of that are true to the book where the original miniseries wasn't. Pet Sematary was the same, that even though they did a huge diversion in one element of the story, and Pet Sematary in other ways they drew from the book more closely. And so thinking about this also, this being a feature film, whereas the last time they made, and actually I think the original Salem's Lot was also a miniseries, like I don't think either of them were feature films. To see, go back and reread the book and really evaluate which composition was closest to the source material.
Yeah, I bet you there's a website that has like closest.
Save myself the work.
like didn't deviate from the source material.
And if there isn't,
the source
then I definitely need to quit my job
you
and
need
produce
to, like,
that website.
Start doing that. Yeah. Well, I think also it's like trusting the source material, trusting the story, and a lot of what influenced how movies ended or the changes that remained were people who were in the film industry. Like the audience will like this more.
Right.
And more like, instead of being like, this is a bestseller for a reason.
Yeah.
But they did change Bird Box a little bit in the end. And we can talk
about
that.
You can talk about that because I have no knowledge of that.
I haven't read it. I only know it because I watched a few videos about the novel versus
You mean to prepare for the recording that I completely forgot about?
Yeah. So it all circles back
it to certainly
the
does.
Movie we're talking about today.
So, as Meredith mentioned, it really is a star-studded cast of characters with Sandra Bullock in the lead. Sarah Paulson is another huge name in it that we absolutely love her and everything she does.
And she insisted, she was like, I want Sarah Paulson to play my sister.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, that's nice. Awesome. Because she's great.
Love her. John Malkovich is a really big character. Beatty Wong is in there for a little bit. The little girl in the story is played by actress Vivian Lyra Blair, who was young Leia in the Obi-Wan series. And she was also in that Stephen King movie Boogeyman that came out not that long ago.
That was a good one.
Yep. Tom Hollander, who is a British actor that I always remember from Pirates of the Caribbean, but hasn't been in a ton of other things, obviously.
I love him as Mr. Collins in Pride and Prejudice.
In Pride and Prejudice with Keira Knightley.
These potatoes are so... like. He just goes on and on about potatoes, and I'm like, I love you so much. Yeah,
he's incredible. And then Pruitt Taylor Vince, who's another recognizable face. He was in Constantine. I always remember him from that movie Identity that John Cusack made.
I love that movie, too.
Yeah. And then in a very small role, but very dear to my heart, is Parminder Nagra, who she was on ER for a long time, but I first fell in love with her in Bend It Like Beckham.
She's always playing doctors all the time.
Yep, she can't help herself. When she's not playing a teenage soccer player, she's a doctor. But anyway, yeah, just like everywhere you turn, it's like every role in the film is filled by just the right person.
Yeah.
And I didn't even include his name because his name is not familiar to me, but the other lead that plays the character, Tom, he was in the Predator movie, which I love. Like the most recent Predator movie that came out that was called The Predator, because they all have, you know, slight nuanced different names. But anyway, he's incredible, too.
Oh, he's fantastic. And that other guy, oh, shoot, I forget the name of him. He was the guy who worked for the grocery store.
Yep. And he was in...
He's always the comic relief that's very needed.
Yeah, was he in Get Out?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's always very necessary. We're, like, tense and I have a stomach ache, and then he comes on screen, and he's, like, always the voice of reason.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I love that you're pigeonhole. I'm sure he's in other stuff, too, but he's fantastic. He's great.
Yeah. And then I didn't write down her name, but I'm checking. She was in that movie Patty Cakes. And then she was also in Dumplin', which was like a really... Oh, Danielle McDonald.
I like Patty Cakes.
Yeah. Patty Cakes was so great. And then Dumplin' was just such like a heartwarming, like beautiful girl power story. You didn't see it or you didn't like it?
I was like, this is too annoying.
Oh, really? Oh, I loved it.
Well... I'm glad.
So you're not there for girl power. Gotcha.
No, I don't have time for that. I only want miserable, scary.
Self-loathing.
Self-loathing.
Yeah.
Or Parks and Rec, which is girl power.
That's true. There's a lot of positive female energy and stories in that.
I love it.
But this story opens with an aerial view of a wide river cutting through forests and a voiceover assuring that there is safety in their refuge and asking the listener how many they are and if there are any children, because the fastest way to make it is the river, and he doesn't think you could do it with kids. Now there's a close-up on Mallory's face, and Mallory is Sandra Bullock's character, giving a fierce lecture about remaining alert and focused, keeping on blindfolds, or she would hurt you, like this incredibly threatening lecture. And zooming out, we see she's talking to two small children with this really aggressive lecture, and she refers to them as boy and girl as their names. And amid the instructions and threats, Mallory says, "If you look, you will die." So it's like getting our first indication of what this threat is.
Yeah, the danger that's around them.
Yeah. Next, Mallory takes parakeets from a cage and puts them in a shoebox, and the trio leave a house in the woods, all three blindfolded. Outside, Mallory finds a string that she uses to guide her as she counts steps, and soon they're at a small boat on the edge of the river. They load up, and Mallory starts rowing. Now we fade across to a scene that says 5 years earlier, and it's Mallory painting in like a, you know, an apartment or a studio space. Her sister Jessica, which is Sarah Paulson's character, arrives and points out the events of which Mallory is blissfully unaware, spreading public hysteria triggered by unexplained mass suicides and psychotic behavior, a phenomenon that the news says began in Romania. A talking head says it doesn't seem to be viral or pathological, but Jessica refers to, quote, soccer moms fighting fighting over bottled water. And so this is like, obviously, it's reminding me of The Happening with the M. Night Shyamalan movie we did with this some sort of thing that the effect it has on people is to make them self-destructive. Yeah. And then also, obviously, how we in real life responded to COVID.
And even more recently, like the dock worker strike and the shortage or people freaking out and making a run within the past few weeks on like toilet paper.
Yeah. Again, with the toilet paper.
Guys, get a bidet.
I said this, but like, of all the things to be worried about running out of, medicine, penicillin, like bandages, food, insulin, water. No. Like, what? Why is wiping your ass your priority for survival?
Yeah, but that was just a few weeks ago. We went to Costco and saw that the supply was so low toilet paper. And I was like, well, we'll get our pack or two and move on with our lives and use our bidets and hope for the best.
So in the scene, we also notice Mallory is pregnant, and in the conversation with her sister, she does express certainty that she won't be able to connect with her baby. She does not seem to be feeling really positively about the idea of having a baby.
She's kind of like in denial, deep denial that it's happening to her.
Yeah, she just definitely doesn't, you know, she's not bursting with maternal joy.
Not at all. And then her sister's like, so like, where's the baby going to live? Because this place is a piece of crap. Where you live is no good.
The two of them go to Mallory's obstetrician appointment. And of course that her doctor, her OB, is Parminder Nagra's character. Mm-hmm. And after, as Mallory heads through a glass walkway, she sees a woman start smashing her head into the window repeatedly.
Her sister separate. She's like, I'll go get the car. Because she was sick in the bathroom. So she was on her own for a little bit, walking to her sister and noticed some weird stuff happening with that woman, which is absolutely horrifying because she looked very happy, was on the phone only a little bit earlier in the movie before the her appointment.
Yeah. So Mallory rushes out to meet Jessica in the car and tells her that it's happening here now. So she recognizes that what she just witnessed means that whatever's going on has made it to their town. They try not to panic as they drive through growing chaos, accidents, and explosions all around them. And then as Mallory rifles through the back seat to find Jessica's ringing phone, so she's turned and looking down into the back seat of the car, Jessica says, oh my God, what is that? And we see her expression change, her eyes seem to change, and she starts swerving all over the road. So she's seen something that Mallory didn't, because Mallory was turned around to the back seat. Jessica finally rams a parked car and their car flies through the air and lands upside down. They both crawl out and Jessica walks into the next lane of the street, looks back at Mallory, and then steps in front of a passing garbage truck and is killed.
Yeah. And you know, if her sister was in her right mind, she would have like been to Mallory immediately. Like, are you okay, helping her pregnant sister out of the car? So something is very, very wrong with her.
So now waves of people are running through the devastation, and Mallory, as she runs down the street with them, is knocked down. A woman in a nearby house sees her and runs out to call her inside. She's like, she's pregnant, against her husband's warnings. He's trying to get her to come back in. And just as she gets to Mallory, she looks up and says, Mom, please don't go. And then this woman climbs into a nearby car that is engulfed in flames. As her husband, Douglas, watches from inside the house, the car explodes. A man that's running by helps Mallory up, and they both bang on the door of the house until another man lets them inside. They join the assortment of random people that are taking refuge inside this house. Douglas, the husband of the woman who died, is obviously not Mallory's biggest fan now, because he didn't want his wife to go out to help her, and then his wife ended up dying. They all frantically share their experiences and come to the conclusion that it's something that if you look at it, it makes you kill yourself. And one guy, Charlie, who's the one you were mentioning, who is in the Get Out, who's kind of like the comic relief, but he offers an idea shared by most world religions that he's familiar with and has studied about a, quote, end game that involves seeing demons that represent your greatest fear, sadness, or loss. And so that kind of like aligns with, you know, this woman that had gone outside to help Mallory, like being like, Mom, because then when Mallory came inside, her husband was like, her mom has been dead for 10 years.
Yeah.
And so we're like, oh, you're starting to put those pieces together a little bit.
Right. Yeah. It's poses at different things, according to the person, you know, not the same as for everyone.
Right. So now it fades back to the trio in the boat, and the screen says 6 hours on the river. They're tented under a blanket, and the kids are asleep. And then the birds in the box start chirping frantically, and it's clear that that is not a good sign. But just after that one little snippet on the river, we're back to the house. It's been 3 days, and there's a knock at the door. The group takes precautions like a draped blanket and a shotgun, and they let in a girl, again, against Douglas's objections. So Douglas is John Malkovich's character, and he's the anti-hero in all of this, like the real piece of shit, asshole, selfish, like... objectionable, like nobody likes him, but he in a lot of the scenarios is like the voice of caution, the voice of reason.
He's definitely the Selena from of 28 Days Later, the one who's like surviving is the best. Like, who the fuck are you? Don't come in here. Don't help them.
Are they
like,
gonna slow you down? Then just cut them loose.
Fucking leave them. Yeah. Like he's definitely has that like survivor's mentality.
Yeah.
Like I don't care about you, and I care about myself more.
Exactly. So the girl that they let in, her name is Olympia. This is the girl from Dumplin'. Mm-hmm. And she's pregnant, too. And she's due right around when Mallory is. So now they got two pregnant ladies in there. The group try to make a plan to get more food. And the homeowner, Greg, who is B.D. Wong's character, is sure that they can safely use digital imaging to, quote, see and navigate. And he risks himself to test it on the house security cameras. But sadly, the test fails. And whatever Greg sees on the computer causes him to kill himself. So like, okay, well, that's not going to work.
Yeah. So whatever it is, you can't, I mean, even if it's like artificially
right.
viewed transmitted. Through a video, it's it still bad affects news. You.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Olympia tries to foster, I put a quote, prego girl bond with Mallory, while some other people form another kind of bond by hooking up in the laundry room. But our antisocial girl, Mallory, is really only connecting with Tom, who is the hottie who helped her in the street.
Yeah. And also, you know. Who can blame her?
Oh my God. He's so...
he's a little cutie patootie.
So good looking. And I like the little joke back and forth, like a little bit later on about... because she is... I mean, Sandra Bullock is older than this actor.
She's like, I'm 20 years older than
right.
you.
Right. Like, and so they... it, when things start to get a little closer and like start to get a little flirtatious with them, like they acknowledge that.
She's because, like, I could have been your babysitter.
Right? And he's like, my hot babysitter.
Yeah, I know. He's, but she's like, is it because of the end of the world? He's like... Maybe.
But, you know, Tom always gives me a hard time because the two things I always find myself having to look up whenever we're watching anything is age differences and height differences between actors in movies.
Yeah.
And usually it's disgustingly like the guy is, you know, like 40 years older than the female lead or whatever. But in this case, we have a little bit of a reversal and we're like, go Sandy.
Yeah. I mean, she looks good.
Yep.
She has those acting chops and she has those comedy chops. Yeah. You know,
and she's got those cheekbones, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She looks great.
Okay, so back to the river, 14 hours in now. And as she's rowing, a voice calls through the fog from shore, tempting them to take off their blindfolds and is offering them food. Mallory's not having it, though, and she fires off her pistol at a man she can't see, but we do, who gets to the boat and attacks. And he's trying to pull her blindfold off. He says, I've seen one. I've seen the truth. And so, like, he... is like crazed, right? And he wants to take her blindfold off so that she will see the things because he has this, you know, this different perspective on seeing them.
Yeah, they're called seers.
Yeah.
Those, the people who have seen them and survived, but they're changed.
Right.
Like altered.
Yeah. And it makes sense, like, and that I, you know, can kind of mention that later when Gary comes in, but it all does.
Mr. Collins.
Yeah. When it all starts to make sense, when the little bits of information you get along the way start to fit together and like their little puzzle pieces.
Yeah.
But as he's attacking, the birds are freaking out in their box. She keeps fighting and pulls out a machete that she had in her boat because she's misprepared. And manages to drive him back.
Goddamn right.
Yeah. Get the fuck out of here. And he sinks under the water and she gets to drift away.
That guy plays a creep in everything I've seen.
Oh, I didn't really look that closely at him. I didn't notice.
He was in Mindhunter and he played this other creep serial killer.
Yeah.
And he's the worst. Maybe he's a nice person in real life, but like I don't have a good impression of him so far.
That's fair. Okay, so the story goes back to the house and they are out of food. A group is chosen to head to the grocery store that Charlie works at. And the plan is to black out all the windows of the car and drive using only the GPS. So Mallory goes with Tom, Douglas, Charlie, and Lucy, who is their resident police academy recruit. This, like, you know, kind of hot, saucy young girl.
She's like a spunky, spunky lady.
Little tough girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love this. So they're navigating. It's a very short drive to the grocery store, and they're going really slow, obviously, just driving by the GPS. And they're, like, driving over dead bodies. And Tom's just saying, it's just a speed bump. It's just, and they're all just, like, just trying to not think about the fact that what they know they're driving over is dead bodies.
Yeah.
It's really upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
And then the proximity alert for the car and the GPS keeps going off more and more intensely as they're surrounded by forces outside the car. And then finally, Tom tears off and he gets them to the store, like crashes, you know, into the shrubs in front of the grocery store. And I just love, because then the GPS goes, you have arrived.
They're like, ah! Let's go shop.
So they get out blindfolded and they grope their way into the store. Inside, while they load up on supplies, this is where Tom and Mallory's bond deepens and they get a little flirtatious. And now Mallory comes upon a birdcage with three parakeets inside. So we see where she, you know, how she came about to have those birds that she does later on. Douglas, on the other hand, is now drunk in the liquor aisle. And I just love that when he, like, calls them all there, I'm going to make a toast. And he goes, here's to making the end of the world great again. I'm like, ew. No, thank you. And he suggests that they should actually just stay at the store, which is, like, a perfect example of, like, fuck those people back at the house that don't have food. Why would we leave? Like, you know, we took the risk. We got here safely. We're surrounded by enough food and supplies to last us a year. Why are we going to go back? And Sandy Bullock's like, because we're not assholes.
He's like, I am, though.
Yeah, I am, in fact, an asshole. So, yeah. But suddenly there's pounding coming from the door to the loading dock, and they hear a man pleading from the other side. Tom opens the door just a crack, and as the man continues to beg, the birds start freaking out. The man almost forces his way in, and we can hear him ranting about, quote, seeing it, and all that same kind of, like, language that we heard from the guy that attacked the boat.
And Charlie's like, he did some time in the pen. He's always a little weird,
but he's always been nice to me.
So yeah. He's a little bit interesting.
Yeah. And so he's just about to overpower them and force his way inside. And Charlie runs at him and body slams him back outside. But Charlie gets shut outside with him. And then soon a puddle of blood spreads inside from under the door. And so they're like, well, so long, Charlie.
Poor Charlie.
And then not a moment later, the knocking and pleading begins, sounding exactly like it did before.
Ew, you big creep.
Yeah. And then Douglas goes, how is that guy alive? Like, so they're, this is kind of, seems like, you know, their first exposure to the seers.
An introduction to people who are manipulative.
Yeah. That are being affected differently by what's going on.
Yes. Yeah.
So that night, Mallory and Douglas spar in the kitchen and he offers the nugget of wisdom. And I quoted this and I put it in red because it's so perfect. Malkovich says, in the end, there are only two types of people, the assholes and the dead.
Yeah.
And it, like, the perfectly captured, like you were saying, Selena or Serena?
I want to say Selena.
Yeah. Just that attitude that, like, you can't be nice and survive. Like, in these kinds of situations, you can't be a philanthropist. You can't be Mother Teresa. Like, if you want to survive, you've got to put yourself first.
Yeah. And he says, every time we've tried to do the right thing, it's somebody's only died. Brought us death.
Yeah.
And, you know, he kind of has a point with the exception of Olympia.
Yeah.
But... continue.
Yeah. And then I said, like, two real pieces of shit, Lucy and her laundry room hookup Felix, steal the car into the night. And so Felix, I guess, is Machine Gun Kelly.
Yeah. I didn't know who he was. Yeah. So.
And I didn't.
And you know what?
Yeah.
I don't feel bad don't about really that. Care,
no. And, like, I recognize his name, but I didn't recognize his face in the movie. And so I didn't even look up who he was because I figured he was just some rando actor.
I only noticed when I looked at the cast names for the podcast.
You were like,
podcast.
Hey, what's
I was
that? Like, oh. That's not a normal name.
Okay.
Okay, so back to the river. They're 24 hours into the trip now, and Mallory accidentally rows into a truck that's run into the river, and Boy falls overboard. Mallory gets him back in the boat, but the food and blankets are lost. Mallory hears a far-off tinkling sound and rows to the bank of the river. She leaves the kids in the boat, and with a cord that spooling out from her belt, she walks off following what turn out to be wind chimes at some building. Inside the building, she finds blankets and canned food. She's grabbing all the supplies that she can until she sees that the cord she left hooked to a bed being pulled, meaning that there's something outside. So with her gun drawn and her blindfold on, she heads back to the boat following the cord. But she falls and she fires the gun kind of like blindly. And back in the boat, girl hears the gunshots. And
she's like, Mallory needs help.
And so girl loops a rope around herself and starts walking off to find Mallory. As she's standing in the woods, you see a forest gathering around her. And she's so tiny and vulnerable and sweet with her little blindfold on. And suddenly she's jerked backward. But it's just Mallory hauling her back to the boat, angry at her for leaving. And she screams at the girl like she's just yelling in her face. If something happens to me, you save yourself. What do? You save yourself. Like she's just like,
say it, repeat it, yeah. Say it.
And this girl is just a little button. She's like five. She's, I mean, she's literally five in the movie. I don't know how old the actress was at the time, but she's tiny and just so, so vulnerable looking. Mm-hmm. And so it's such an interesting dynamic to understand, like, where Mallory's character is coming from in terms of survival. But then also, like, this is still a tiny, tiny child.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of, like, Walking Dead with Carol, like, one of the very main characters of that show, just being, like, you protect yourself or you die.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, you can't be nice. Basically, same thing. And then just always in these crazy apocalypse stuff is batshit scenarios.
But it makes sense, you know, like, that the people that are still around, you know, once most of the population has died, are the ones that, I mean, even if you're extraordinarily lucky, it only lasts so long. And if you survive, it's probably out of not self-centeredness like a flaw, but, you know, that survivalist, like, self-preservation behavior.
Definitely.
Yeah. But it's like, it's a little baby. She's just a little baby thing.
And you feel for her, but also you're like, ooh, totally that was understand. Close.
Yeah.
She could have been, you know, not around anymore. It's awful.
Yeah. So back at the house in the night, Olympia unilaterally decides to let in a new guy who's knocking on the door, and this is Gary.
Yes. And he's also in White Lotus.
Oh, is he? I haven't seen it.
He's so good.
He's amazing.
Yes, he's fantastic.
Yeah. So, and everybody's like, what the fuck? Why'd you let him in? Who are you? Get him out of here. Like, there's, you know, a real kerfuffle about her decision to just do this without checking with anybody. And Gary reports that the house that he'd been hiding in was attacked by escapees from a mental institution who forced them outside and tried to make them look at the creatures. He said that they weren't affected like others. They had no blindfolds on and they were happy that they said everyone needed to see. And so this is something where, like, I'm watching this and I'm thinking, like, okay, well, you know, if this is something that most, like, you know, mentally stable, healthy individuals, it shows you your greatest fear, sadness, or loss or regret that would drive you to self-destruct. Whereas if your brain is wired differently, whether from an organic condition or experience or whatever, like, you being exposed to that same, like, you know, trigger or whatever might react very differently.
In the sequel, I watched the sequel today. Mm-hmm. They said it alters your DNA in a different way.
Oh,
okay. The seers, your DNA is altered.
And is there an explanation why certain people become seers and others don't?
I think it's like when you've suffered great trauma, and the horrible, horrible grief, extreme violence, other things that will make you process it differently.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, people will be kind of essentially recruited to be kind of make people see.
Right.
To help them. On their behalf.
Yeah.
On the creature's behalf, kind of be like, and it.
They're all a bunch of Renfields.
A little bit. Yeah.
Um. So now, you know, Gary's reporting all this to the group, and suddenly Douglas grabs the shotgun and tries to force the new guy out. But as he's monologuing to them all about not letting anyone new in, our favorite little old lady of the house, Cheryl, who's somebody I hadn't mentioned before, but just another person that's been staying in the house, comes up behind Douglas and smashes a vase over his head, knocking him out. And then they lock him in the garage because now, like, he's always been an asshole, but now he's like a danger to them. So they're like, okay, well, you live in the garage now.
Yeah.
So after this, you know, little incident, Olympia makes Mallory promise to take care of her baby if anything happens to her. And then Mallory gives Olympia a little Hello Kitty keychain as a gift that she had grabbed at the grocery store when they made their supply run. And then it cuts to the river 38 hours in, and we see girl is holding that same little Hello Kitty toy. The boat is approaching rapids, and Mallory stops and tells the kids that to get through the rapids, one of them is going to have to look to direct her where to row. So one of them is going to have to take their blindfold off and look. Yeah. And so you're like, what the fuck?
I know. And their little eyes are like, what? Yeah.
So then they leave that, and we're back at the house. Olympia's labor starts, and right after, Mallory's water breaks. So while the two women are laboring at the same time, our new guy, Gary, now left all by his lonesome, is vibing on some classical music while he goes through his private collection of creepy monster sketches, which if it was like very scary stories to tell in the dark illustrations.
Very Alvin Schwartz.
Yeah.
charcoal.
Yeah, so you're looking at this and you're like,
did you guys steal these? Yeah. I like write from those.
But it's very like pulling
books.
Your collar like, you're like, what's great. What we leave this guy alone for 2 seconds and what's he doing?
And he's all like grinning like la 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 la.
So Mallory delivers a boy baby in what honestly seems like 2.5 minutes. Like she has that baby in the time it takes Gary to spread his sketches out on the coffee table. Like she just pops that baby out. And you're like, oh shit, sounds good.
I wish.
I know, right? And so, again, with all of the distraction that continues with the women and their deliveries, Gary gets the birdcage and puts it in the freezer, and he starts uncovering windows.
And what's his name is like, what the fuck are you doing?
So Douglas is the only one knowing or seeing Gary do this because he's locked in the garage looking mm-hmm. through the window into the kitchen being like, dude, like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
So clearly now we know Gary, and I put it in my recap as one of the quote infected, but a seer. Mm-hmm. We know that he is now. And so
nefarious intentions.
Tom comes downstairs and he's the first to realize that this is happening. Aside from Douglas, who's been watching it all.
Douglas is yelling. He's like, he put the frickin' birds in the freezer. Something's not right.
But unfortunately, Gary gets the jump on Tom and knocks him out. And then he opens the big garage door, exposing Douglas to the outside.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Upstairs, Olympia delivers her baby girl, and suddenly creepy Gary shows up in the delivery room, like a real big creep, looks at the babies, and then starts opening the blinds. And then, of course, dummy Olympia looks out the window. And is immediately affected, and Mallory luckily is able to get the baby away from her before Olympia dives out the window to her death.
Mm-hmm.
Then Gary forces Cheryl's eyes open, and once she's affected, she stabs herself in the throat with scissors. So all that's left now is Mallory hiding under the blanket with the babies. But before Gary can get to them, Douglas shows up. They never say how he got inside. I just imagine he
smashed broke his the door way in, open. Yeah.
But he shows up with the shotgun, but he has to keep his eyes closed.
He's our anti-hero, and he came in and he's like, get the fuck away from them.
Yeah. So he shows up with the shotgun. He wings Gary with the gun, but Gary, obviously because his eyes are open, tackles him, and they both fall through the railing to the first floor, landing next to Tom, who's still unconscious on the floor. Gary stabs Douglas with the scissors, killing him. And then Tom wakes up and the two are struggling for the shotgun. Under the blanket upstairs, Mallory hears shots. And thankfully, in a moment, it's Tom that comes to find her. Because in that moment, we don't know who shot who. Because they both had their hands on the gun. But luckily, Tom was able to kill Gary. And so now it's just Mallory and Tom and the two babies. Everyone else in the house is dead.
Yeah.
So
it's freaking awful.
Yeah, really, really carnage. Quick decimation of the population there. So now it's 5 years later, and a blindfolded Mallory is training the kids to detect and interpret noises outside, while inside this new house that they've put together, Tom tries to raise a response on a radio. Next, we see Mallory scavenging for supplies at an abandoned house nearby. And while she's there, a couple of cars drive around outside and take off, like doing donuts or whatever. So you know that there's still like these seers, people are still active around them.
Yeah, they're not driving all cautious. They're driving like tearing down the road.
Yeah. Well, and she says she's like driving like they don't have blindfolds on.
Yeah.
So if they don't have blindfolds on, you know that's bad news bears.
They're bad.
Yep. So, and then later, a little sweet hookup scene at the house shows us that Mallory and Tom are now a couple. So they are like this little family unit. But in the night, they're awakened when the radio comes alive with a man's voice, someone named Rick, reporting that they have a compound safe with supplies. So we can tell that this is the same message we heard from the beginning of the movie. And Rick gives them directions on how to get there and tells them that after the rapids in the river, to follow the sound of the birds. Mallory and Tom initially argue over whether or not to make the journey, and also about how Mallory has been raising or not raising the kids, including not giving them names. Like, Tom is very much like, they need hope, they need love, they need joy, they need names, they need a mother. And she's like, every decision I've ever made has been for them. I'm keeping them alive. Like, there's no... You know, there's no, like, feeling or sentimentality. Like, she's so utilitarian in just survival with caring for them. And that's her, that's how she is mothering. Like, that's what motherhood to her means in this context, is keeping them alive, doing whatever she has to do to keep them alive, but not nurturing them in any other way.
Yeah. Well, she's also trying to keep herself detached.
Yeah.
I think maybe for her own selfish reasons too.
Well, yeah, because you know, if you've lost
functioning
everybody, and you know you could lose people at any moment, it makes sense that you would want to keep that distance there, that emotional distance.
But well, that's kind of impossible,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So next, all four in the family are making their way through the woods and into another house to scavenge, and they share some stale Pop-Tarts until they hear a car pull up outside, and moments later, bullets fly through the window. Tom makes Mallory leave with the kids out the back and makes her promise that if he's not with them in 15 minutes, to take the boat and go and try to get to the sanctuary. Tom goes out the front door and meets a gang of blindfold-free crazies, and there's a shootout.
One of whom is, what's his name, David Dalsmachian?
Yeah, that, like, Italian-looking guy with the real pinched face.
He's in Late Night with the Devil. Mm-hmm. He's been in Voyage of the Demeter.
Yeah.
He's in so much, and I love him. Yeah.
And that's what's pretty, because, like, he's in it for a moment. You know, a handful of couple like yelled lines and everything. But it's like, you know, every time you turn around in this movie, you have somebody doing just exactly the right thing for that role.
Yeah. He's always playing a creep.
Yeah. Someone not quite right.
He's very good. Although in Voyage of the Demeter, he plays a really awesome guy. He's great character. But I he's in so much. You definitely, anyone who's watching would recognize him probably at this point.
So, wounded in the shootout, Tom literally says, fuck it, takes off his blindfold so that he can see to take out the rest of the gang. So, he shoots the rest of them, except one. And as he's going after the last one, the wind stirs and Tom is overtaken by the creatures. So, like, he makes it a couple minutes and is chasing the last guy before, you know, he's affected. But he fights it long enough to kill the last man. And then he shoots himself, which is like... the worst.
Crushing.
So bad.
Because
he's just, he's just like a flawless character. Like, he's pure good.
Yeah.
You know, he's been like upright and generous and kind and upstanding throughout this whole thing. Just like a really like a flawless character. And so it's like such a huge loss.
Yeah.
So this is the point when Mallory, obviously devastated, decides to make the trip down the river, and we come full circle to the rapids, which it says is now 42 hours on the river. When forced to choose a child to look without a blindfold, Mallory can't decide. She can't pick one.
Yeah.
And so she decides.
Boy goes, I'll look. And she's like, no. and then, inside. And then she's like,
and then girl goes, I'll look. And then they're both just like, their little chins are trembling. And she's like, fuck it.
So afraid.
Nobody's looking.
She's like, no one's looking.
Yeah.
We're just going to hope for the best.
Yep, pretty much. So they toss and slam their way down the river. And eventually, of course, the boat tips. Mallory is calling for them as she's like, you know, just being carried along by the current. She finds boy first. And then she finds girl. And they're all alive, including the birds that girl held on to. So, like, the birds have been in this shoebox that was, like, in this little rope that, you know, girl's been, like, kind of responsible for and carrying, like, a little purse this whole time. And so she still has the fucking birds.
She has it, like, in her little tiny palm. Yeah. She, like, this box of birds.
Yep, she's still got the birds. So they follow the sounds of more birds into the forest. Voices in the wind try to coax Mallory to take her blindfold off and look. And she trips and falls down a hill, and she's separated from the children. As she tries to find them again, the wind uses her voice to try and trick the kids into taking their blindfolds off.
I know. And girl's like, is it really okay?
I thought it's not safe. Is it, should I take it? And it's just like,
I know.
No.
You're like, ah!
And she's like, she was like, this is my voice. This is my, don't take it off.
Yeah.
So she finds boy safe, but she can't find girl. And boy tells her that girl is scared of her. And so then all of a sudden, like, Mallory just has like this total breakdown where everything comes flooding out. And she apologizes to girl for, like, you know, just the way that she's been and the things that she said and everything, and convinces girl to come back. And, you know, it's just like that moment where Mallory's like crouched on the ground, like she's got boy wrapped in her arms, and she's just talking and calling out to girl, and girl's like walking up to her. And then the moment that girl like reaches her and like Mallory feels her and like, you know, wraps her in her arms again, like, you're just like crying. Like, it's just so amazing that they're, you know, that little moment of them coming together again. So beautiful.
Well, it was dicey for a while.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. And it's not done being dicey, because reunited, they continue following the sounds of the birds. But there's still one last attempt from the, you know, the presence or the demons or whatever, using Tom's voice to try and trick Mallory. But she's no dummy. And the three run and make it to this big stone building. They pound on the door for tense moments before they finally get let in. And people inside check their eyes and declare that they're okay, so that they can tell these people they've just let in are not seers. So they finally meet Rick, the guy from the radio, and they take off their blindfolds to find that they're at the Janet Tucker School for the Blind. And you're mm-hmm. like, ah, yes, the safest people in the world.
Yeah. They're like, what the hell's going on here? What's going on?
They enter a beautiful courtyard with birds and flowers, with people and other children. Seeing the roof enclosed in lattices of vines, they decide to release their birds to join the others. And lo and behold, it's her OB, mm-hmm. Dr. Lapham, or whatever the name is. And after the kids introduce themselves to the doctor as girl and boy, Mallory finally gives them new names, and she tells them that their names are Olympia and Tom.
Aww.
And you're just like, and that's the end of Bird Box.
Mm.
So I guess I don't need to ask if it's scary, but what did you think of Bird Box, Meredith?
I mean, I thought it was suspenseful. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty interesting. I always like the dynamic of survivors who don't know each other trying to mm-hmm. coexist in a apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to make a decision that's bad? Who's going to, like, try to swing their dick around? Who's going to be, like, the caretaker who, you know.
Who's going to be weak? Who's going to be selfish? Yeah.
And then you add in two pregnant women.
Right.
And then you have the weird addition of people who are able to see who can manipulate you, who are a totally different danger.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not too crazy, as you know, in like a zombie kind of world. There are also marauders who are very dangerous too.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there's that dynamic also.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was really interesting. I liked it. I thought it was a fun and very creative movie. I never read the book, but I liked the acting. I thought it was very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Some people freaking hated it.
Really?
They thought it was dog shit.
I can't imagine.
But I liked it. People were like, I can't believe I wasted my time with that. I'm like, well, what were you expecting?
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of the hang up was not showing what the entity looks like.
Ugh.
But for me, you know how I am. I'm like, yeah. I'd rather not see it. because, you know, I think the fact that it looks different from every person made it all the more interesting. Yeah. So it doesn't look like one.
And it's supposed to be intangible. Like, you can't run away from it.
It's supposed to be, they're like entities of some kind. They don't really know what it is, but it's a being that can manipulate you, maybe some, I would say maybe some mind reading in some way, like to see who you are.
They would have to,
and how they can manipulate you into like letting your guard down or believing, like using voices or whatever. But I thought it was really good. I thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wouldn't say it's like in my top, but it definitely was, didn't feel like a waste of time. And it was like a straight to Netflix movie.
Yeah. Like the production quality was impressive considering it was a straight to Netflix project. Yeah.
And I want to say it's one of the top watched Netflix movies of all time. But
it wouldn't surprise me.
At least for the first few years after it was released, I'm not sure since then. But did you think it was scary?
I think that there were maybe a couple of moments that felt a little scary. More so at the beginning when things were more unexplained at that point. But I agree that like what this brought to the table was character development. More than anything. And that the reason I think it was so successful is because they had such high quality actors. Yeah. And like you said, that this is a characteristic in so many post-apocalyptic films of just this random assortment of strangers, like Dawn of the Dead's another perfect example. And we've talked about even not in post-apocalyptic ones, but like when we were talking about The Menu, when you just have the setting of a film, like, because the majority of this film was that whole group together in the initial house. Like, the last portion, when it was just her and Tom with the kids left, wasn't, you know, the bulk of the film.
Right.
And so I think that it's such an incredible opportunity to explore the variety of human reactions and responses to tense situations, to stressful situations, to danger. And like, you know, seeing true people's true colors come out and everything. It's made possible by this setting where it's not one family where you all have similar traits or whatever. It's not...
And values.
Yeah, or it's not like a group of people that already know each other so that they already have relationships established. It's completely random people that are new to one another with, you know, maybe a couple here and there. And just seeing, you know, you see the good people gravitate to each other. You see the difficult people isolate themselves. And then there's always, like, the person that... you know, you does something unexpected, like in this case when Lucy and Felix like stole the car and left. You know, they were just kind of like innocuous, you know, sort not side characters, but hadn't paid a lot of attention to them. And then they just like kind of take off with the car. Yeah. And it makes you realize like you didn't know them and they didn't know each other. Like their relationship began when they met in this house. And then all of a sudden they're like running off with the vehicle together.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it also was interesting that I forget John Malkovich's character's name.
Douglas.
He's led into this house. And it's revealed that he's suing the owner.
Yeah, Greg.
Because he's like, he's building a monstrosity for his neighbor. And I have to look at it. And Mallory's like, why do you care? He's like, well, I have to look at it. So he's that type of person.
Yeah.
Where you're like, wow, you're just like a dick. Like you're somebody who like sues over like a few inches between your fence line. And they're like, you're one of those people. Mm-hmm. So that also, I think, was very intentional, like to say, like, to reveal what kind of person he is.
Yeah.
Survivor, but also petty.
Yeah, definitely petty.
Where you're like, this is, you know, someone who I don't share his values. Mm-hmm. And Mallory certainly does not.
Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting little add to that character.
Yeah. It was like they did a good job with Douglas's character, which they don't always do. is, you know, the shitty one, like, sometimes they end up getting their just desserts and it's really satisfying. Yeah. But Douglas had just enough occasions where he did actually, I mean, everything that he did was still to some extent self-serving because, like, you know, his safety was linked to everyone else's safety. So anything that he did for the group was self-serving in a way.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like when he died, you were like, yeah, you got what's coming to you, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah. I think that they really managed to make him a tiny bit empathetic with this right. whole narrative about how, like, that's how you need to survive. Like, you have to look out for yourself if you're going to survive. And, like, that whole conversation between he and Mallory, where, like, you know, she's talking about her father because, like, he was a piece of shit, and she's saying, you're just like my dad. But in the end of the conversation, they kind of, like, reach this a little bit of an understanding.
Like, bygones be bygones. Yeah,
and, like, a mutual acceptance of each other, each other's, like, you know, opposing viewpoints and everything.
Right, yeah.
Because, like, it's kind of like, the character, again, going back to Dawn of the Dead, the character, and I can't remember the actor's name, but he played Doug Stamper on House of Cards.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he was the one that was, like, you know, the power, like, totally, like, power went to his head mall cop character, yeah. where he's like, I'm in charge of everything, you know, blah, 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 and he's a real piece of shit. But then, like, toward the end of the movie, doesn't he, like, he kind of reveals that, like, he's actually, and then he ends up, like, sacrificing himself, doesn't he?
Yeah.
If I'm remembering correctly.
He's like, it fucking figures.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's reluctant, but it's practical, like, when he sacrifices himself. And so, and that's the thing when I feel like why Dawn of the Dead was such a good movie, and I feel like this is such a good movie, is just entirely that exploration of human character and human behavior.
Right, yeah. Which I love, yeah. obviously. And mm-hmm. I think it's also one of my big draws to virus themed movies mm-hmm. where you yeah. see how there is this huge, huge threat, but then it's also like the threat within,
mm-hmm.
you know, who do you become?
Mm-hmm.
What about the people around you? What about people that you thought you knew?
Yeah.
And expectations.
You thought you could trust or you should yeah. be able to trust.
Yeah. And they could be wildly different, mm-hmm. With all these pressures and, you know, just surviving and, you know, who's just like in the crazy because he's like, oh, my wife and kid are, you know, whatever.
Yep.
I can't help them.
Yeah. They're probably dead by now anyway. I'm going to go.
And the sheriff, he's like, are you freaking kidding me?
I'm not going to leave her. I'm going back for her.
He's like, yeah, you're going to probably die anyway. And you're like, what the hell? So that guy's a piece of crap.
Yeah.
You know, and.
Or like the soldiers in 28 Days Later when they're yeah. like, that was supposed to be their salvation. And then they're like, oh, no, you just want to make sex slaves out of our women.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we were better off out there.
Yeah. Who are these people who have power and how will they wield that power?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who do you become?
Yeah.
And it's a lot of, you know, we as a society, we deal with a lot of things that will change who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily viral theme or apocalypse or, you know, we had a shutdown. We saw a little bit of what a person will be
mm-hmm.
when that happens.
Yeah.
But, you know, other things happen to people, like bad relationships or bad jobs, or like, who does that turn you into?
Mm-hmm.
How do you treat people that you care about? Like, how will you function? Will you have regrets about how you treat your spouse or significant other or your children? So there's like also like insight about that, but that's one of the reasons I love horror movies. And then this part of that, you know, subset of horror,
yeah.
because really it's just about people and how they, you know, the human condition
yeah.
of being in a society.
Yeah, and so. Like that, I think that since this is the last movie that we're going to do for this viral, you know, little mini project that we were doing, which is funny because it's not a virus, but what it has in common with the other movies is exactly what we've been talking about, is placing people in these survival situations where they're at constant risk of being exposed to whatever it is that is attacking humankind.
Mm-hmm.
And how they respond.
Yeah.
How they
yeah.
survive, if they survive. And also, you know, like what, like, is it, what's the hope? You know, what, because what I've always kind of thought when I think about myself, I'm like, this all just seems really hard. I feel like I would kind of be the person to be like, I'll just die. I'm good. Like, this really seems like it would suck, like the effort to put in to stay alive. And then, and that was a point, like when it was Tom and Mallory and the kids in that house in the woods and everything, and they were, they had created a subsistence living. Like they could, I mean, they were starting to run out of supplies that they could scavenge from nearby houses, but it's like they had managed to survive and were pretty stable at that point. Mm-hmm. But what kind of life is that?
Yeah.
You know?
Is it just scraping by?
Yeah. And it's like, you're never going to interact with other people. The kids are never going to know any other kids. Like, is there a point? Is there a point to surviving if that's what life is going to look like? And I look at myself and I'm like, yeah, no, I'd probably decide it wasn't.
It's a little bit of, like, the road. You're like, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, it's so grim. Did you ever watch that movie?
No.
It's fantastic, but fantastically depressing.
Yeah.
It's like the world, it's the end,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's like a global winter, basically. Mm-hmm. And this guy who he's traveling with his son, and there's cannibals on the road as they're, you know, trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
It's bleak. And you're like, what's the point?
Yeah.
and it's just so grim.
Yeah.
And so sad. But, I mean, it's impactful. It's a very good movie, but it just...
Well, you know, it could cause you to ask that question. Mm-hmm. What would you do in that situation? And obviously nobody can know, but you could, you know, kind of speculate. And another movie that could have potentially kind of been part of this category would have been, and it's not a movie, but the miniseries The Stand, whether it's the original or the remake, because that actually, you know, was a virus, you know, Captain Trips. But then obviously it had like, you know, a God and the devil overarching theme behind the virus that drove a lot of the people's behavior after the virus. But it's like, I feel like that it actually doesn't, one of the ways that it doesn't really align, aside from the whole God element to the story, was it's one of the, and I don't know if this is the case with Walking Dead, where sometimes in these viral movies it's like you're just immune and nobody knows why. So if you survived, you're not walking around under constant threat of being infected. Because like in The Stand, all the people that survived just survived. They didn't have to worry about getting sick. They didn't know why they were immune, but they could just go about their lives because they couldn't get sick for whatever reason. And so it really just focused on then what kind of things do people do under those circumstances? And for them, it was to gravitate to one another. Like people were like social creatures. They want to reestablish communities, reestablish connections, because the vast majority of humans would not want to continue living if they were just alone.
Right.
Right. So they seek out that contact and other people.
Yeah. I think in Walking Dead, everyone has it.
Everyone has
this virus. Everyone does.
Mm-hmm.
And when you die, you're reanimated.
Okay. So all of the non-zombie people, it's just about staying alive, because if they die, they will be
reanimated.
They will become. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But like nobody's. Unless something changed in the past, like I didn't watch the last season, but
yeah,
unless I missed a huge plot point.
But yeah, so I think that that's, you know, what ties the movies in this subgenre together, and what can potentially make them horrifying as much as the, whatever it is that's attacking humankind, is what it brings out in the people, the characters, and sometimes like the real like ugliness and terror that the human behavior actually produces.
Yeah. Did you? Okay. So I watched the second one today.
Okay.
It got pretty poor reviews, but I didn't think it was that bad. Like it was made in Spain. It takes place in Barcelona. And one of the main characters, she was in Barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who rented the house.
Okay.
So she's in it. But it's told from the view of a seer.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, when he experienced... Like, you see him, you feel like he's surviving. He's with his daughter. I'm going to give spoilers if you haven't seen it, but you may not care.
Yeah.
listeners, you may not care. So he has his daughter. She's, like, 11. He's like making his way. They're both wearing like goggles that are all blacked out with paint.
Oh, smart.
And they're just, you know, they're in Barcelona. It looks very like some, you know, blown out. All sorts of stuff happened, just like in the first movie. And he's attacked in the underground subway area by people for his food. And they're blind. They've blinded themselves. Mm-hmm. And he initially is like gonna go and like attack them, but his daughter like shakes her head like no. And then he makes his way into a group and he's like tells his daughter like don't come out until I tell you. And then he goes, he leaves and goes with his group, and they're like, what happened? And he's like, well, I was attacked. And he like kind of infiltrates, and then he takes them out, like drives, gets them out of their hiding spot to under the guise of like, I was an engineer, I know where we can find a generator, let me help you. And they kind of will trust him. And he has them see. He's like, you need to see. So in his mind, he's like a sheep leading him, or excuse me, a shepherd, leading people to, and he sees like something light leave their bodies. Mm-hmm. So, and then it shows 9 months earlier with his daughter who hasn't made an appearance, you know, for him. And she's like in the background, like watching. Mm-hmm. And you're like, she's not there anymore. She's not, she is in his imagination. Oh. Like he's seeing her, but why? Why is that? Mm-hmm. So in the very beginning, he's like a businessman. He realizes like, so shit's hitting the fan. He goes to meet his wife and pulls his daughter out of her Catholic school. And the parish priest is there and he's like, well, we need to go see. So already he's like messed up. Uh-huh. So it's revealed later that like they just survive in their apartment. They're about to leave. And then his wife is hit by a car and, you know, it's really awful. And so they're surviving. And his wife, or excuse me, his daughter, they're just like scraping by. It's her birthday. And some of the seers, including the priest, sees a light in their window and goes and pulls them out. And he basically essentially causes the death of his daughter. Mm-hmm. And he witnesses it and it's horrible. And he's like, I'm going to kill you. And then he sees the entity and it's his daughter. Mm. And so she's like, we have to help everyone see, you know, like, let's go, you know, it's, yeah, you know, you have to help them and then you can be with me and mom.
Oh my God.
You know, and you're like, oh my God. Like you can see why he might be
all
messed up. Right. Yeah. So he infiltrates another group and, there's a little girl, she's German and the whole group can't understand her. And there's this British woman who's played by the actress from Barbarian. She's like, I found her in the street. She was like shivering and cold. She was with nobody. And they figured out that her mother, and they're German. Mm. And they're like on vacation and she was separated from her mom. And she's like a little girl, like the same age as his daughter. Mm. And he's like, he tricks the group in a lot of ways to have them see. And in the end realizes what he's doing is really fucked up. And he's like, that's not my daughter.
Yeah.
You know? So he, in the end, helps them, the last two of the group. And I thought it was pretty good. They give a lot of backstory for these entities. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't feel like it was a waste of time. It's something you can watch while you're, you know, folding laundry or something. But I didn't like dislike it. I felt like it was better than people like, gave it credit for.
Yeah.
I don't know. But you felt definitely, you felt bad for him, empathetic. You're like, what he's doing is really fucked up. He's like making these people trust him and they're like really good people. And then he's like leading them to their deaths, mm-hmm. which is really messed up. But then he's like, he thought he was helping them.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And that actually reminded me of one of the other movies that I watched this weekend that I forgot to mention, where I don't know where it falls between like the good movies that I watched and the bad movies that I watched. But it was Watchers, that new Shyamalan one. It's not M. Night Shyamalan. It's like his daughter's.
I didn't watch it yet.
Yeah. And it wasn't terrible. It definitely had a Shyamalan vibe to it in terms of like being a very mystifying premise mm-hmm. at the outset. And you're like, what is going on? And then just the gradual letting out of the rope to tell the story. And then a pretty, you know, serviceable twist at the end. But just that connection, what made me think of it was like this idea of entities, because like with, you know, the idea that people might have not liked Bird Box because you never saw the entities. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if they had tried to give them form, I think it just would have looked stupid. And anytime I've seen that done, like the one Children of the Corn movie where they tried to make He Who Walks Behind the Rose like a physical character and show him, and you're like, are you kidding right now?
The only time I actually liked seeing the creature, mm-hmm, was in with that movie. Oh, shoot. I forgot the name of it. We did
it. The Ritual.
Yes.
Yes.
That's the only time where I was like, oh, whoa, that was awesome.
And even oh that, God, like when they it showed like it to you,
craziness.
They did in pieces from a distance, in a silhouette. Like they were really, even though they did show it, they did it in a really smart way. And it was really fucked up.
I loved it.
But like, anyways, because in The Watchers, you know, there's a kind of a creature element as well that I won't, you know, spoil or over explain. And it wasn't something that they showed like really explicitly, like mm-hmm, out completely out in the open. Mm-hmm. But you did get some sort of like visual impression eventually, okay, of what it was that was going on. And I just can't imagine like how you could have even done that with Bird Box. In yeah, terms of showing, like, because in what you were describing in the sequel is like you could show one person's specific vision, like what one person individually sees. But if it's something that appears differently to everyone based on their inner pain or trauma,
yeah,
then if there is some sort of overarching form, you don't need to see that.
Right. Yeah. And the other character, the woman who was in Barbarian, mm-hmm, she was like, the monster always sounds like my brother who took his own life. Yeah. He was brilliant. I loved him so much. I wasn't even in the country when he took his own life. But that's what the voices that I'm hearing is, yeah, is him. But I know it's not him. And she's like, what do you hear? You know, and I think that's when she's a therapist in her previous life before the survival. She's able to kind of like make little cracks at his, you know, what he's believing, mm-hmm, that and realize and have like leads him to have that realization.
Yeah, like, oh yeah, I'm sure that really is your daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so sad. But yeah. Anyway. Oh, I was going to say, there were a few little things I thought was funny about the filming of Bird Box,
okay,
which was Sandra Bullock wore a blindfold like a lot of the time.
Right.
And kept bumping into the cameras. So that was fun.
Yeah. I can imagine that.
I was like, and then I was going to ask you your thoughts. Would you want to be in a 28 Days Later kind of world or Bird Box
kind of world?
Because you can see.
Yeah.
And like,
and that's anytime that anyone's ever done that thing of like, would you rather be blind or deaf? I've always said deaf.
Yeah.
Deaf. Because happy death. And I like, just from a practical standpoint, I feel like you gather so much more information from the world around you through sight than you do through hearing. And so like, while it would be tragic to not be able to experience some of the things that we experience through hearing, I think that just still participating in society and navigating the world would be a lot more difficult if you were blind than if you were deaf. And so I've always said I would rather be deaf than blind. And so the idea, not just in Bird Box, that like you have to be blind to stay safe, but mm-hmm, then the only time you can take it off is when you're inside. Like you would never, you can't see the rest of the world, you know, ever again. Because it's like, even though, you know, keeping the blindfold on is what keeps you safe. So it's like, well, how can you keep yourself safe if you can't see? Not seeing is what makes you safe. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like when I imagine like, oh, well, in 28 days later, like if you have your sight, you have all of your senses, and then it, you know, it's just up to you, your intelligence and decision making and planning that would determine whether or not you survived.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? Which one would you pick?
Oh, man, those zombies are fast.
Yeah. But the other thing, like, it's an intangible presence that, like, takes the shape of your greatest trauma. I'm like, I don't want to mess with that.
Yeah, that's true. But to your point, At the end of the book,
mm-hmm.
like, and then the movie, it ends on a hopeful note. The filmmaker was very, she did it for a very big reason. She's like, I don't do horror movies really. And I want this to be a little bit uplifting at the end. So she makes it into the school. And there are a lot of people who are differently able, not able to see. And then people who have their sight also taking refuge. But in the book, they've all caused their own blindness through different means. And so she's at the point, she has to make that decision.
Yeah.
If she can do that to her children and herself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little more bleak.
Grim. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But they chose not to go that.
I can see that.
That direction.
Yeah. It was a very uplifting ending.
After all the horribleness, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and very violent. And you saw like people getting their throats slit and people run over and exploding and all sorts of stuff. There's no like camera panning away from the violence. So, and on that note, I would show this to my daughter, I think.
Oh, 100%.
I think she'd be like,
I think Grace might have seen this. I think I recommended it to her when I first watched it. And I think eventually she did watch it too, but I should ask what she thought.
I think she'd find it interesting because like there's no like slow burn, there's no like, oh well look, like little hints of stuff that's gonna happen. It pretty much happens,
yeah, it's direct
right out of the gate within the first 10 minutes, like mayhem happens.
Yeah,
so I think it would be super engaging and you know, psychological thriller in some ways with the people inside. So our next movie is
The Reaping.
I was like, ritual? No. We did that one. The Reaping.
Yeah. So this was kind of my choice and an idea. We were trying to pick something for that would be seasonal for autumn, for November. There's, you know, we've done a couple Thanksgiving movies in the past. The one movie that came out last year called Thanksgiving was hot garbage. So we didn't want to do that. And The Reaping is not, I mean, it's not Thanksgiving themed, but the title at least is. And I've always really enjoyed this movie. Meredith hasn't seen it before, so.
I have not, but I'll watch it. And I mean, Hilary Swank, she's an Oscar winner. Can't be that bad, right? And Idris Elba.
He's yummy.
He's Luther, and I would always watch him.
Yeah, and if you hate it, then we'll have something to talk about.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's boring when we both love a movie.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm like, I liked it when this. Well, me too.
Everyone always says that Leprechaun was our best episode because of how much you virulently hated it.
I'm like, you know what is a piece of garbage?
This movie.
Warwick Davis is a treasure, but this movie is not. It's a treasure.
Or me getting all angry at Bram Stoker's Dracula. Vampires are stupid!
And I'm like, you know what? How many it's a whole genre of vampires.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I don't care. I'm like, well, fair enough.
You're like, touche.
Touche. Okay, well, thanks for listening to our extended episode, apparently.
That's not that extended. Oh, what'd you do?
I don't know.
But yeah, so The Reaping came out in 2007, so check it out if you can ahead of the next episode.
I really hope it's streaming somewhere on, like, 28 Days Later.
Because I do not own it on DVD, so we might be retracting this whole thing.
Ooh, okay, well, thanks for listening again. Bye!
Bye.